Accession number 13114, Reel 1.
This is an interview with Wing Commander Dickie Martin in Cheltenham on Wednesday, the 10th of March, 1993.
Man, what I need to do is new equipment. You were born on the 26th of July, 1918, for the record.
Yes.
Can you tell me what your background is and how you came to fly aeroplanes?
Yes. I never, in fact, ever aspired to be a pilot. I was always wanted to be an engineer. And we were family circumstances were such that my parents couldn't afford to send me to university. Although I was at Cheltenham College here in Cheltenham. But we found out that if one went into the Air Force through Cranwell, all general duties officers in those days had to do a specialist course after 2 years of general service. And the choices were you could either do flying instruction, I think it was armament, signals, or engineering. And if you did engineering and you were any good, the Air Force would sponsor you an engineering degree at Cambridge. This, in fact, is what Whittle did.
This is before the war, is it?
This is before the war, that's right. So so we then set the Army entrance exam, which you had to do in those days. I went to Cranwell in 1937. Well, it was a 2-year course in those days. But of course, at the end of the course, 39, I'd only just joined a Hurricane Squadron at Digby when war broke out.
Where was Digby? I haven't heard that.
Digby was 5 miles. From Cranwell, much to my fury. And of course, I didn't know.
When you went to Cranwell, then you did your engineering degree, or you.
No.
You learnt to fly, obviously.
No, of course, yes, you learnt to fly at Cranwell. You became a permanent commissioned general duties officer, you see. And. As I was saying earlier, you then had to do your squadron service, after which you specialised. And I'd aimed to specialise in engineering. But, of course, by the time the war was over, things were getting on, and I was lucky enough, after the war, to go straight on the Empire Test Pilots course. And from there to Farnborough.
Going back to Cranwell, what aircraft did you train on in those days?
In those days they were initially on Tutors, Avro Tutors, then the Hart and Audex, and luckily I was one of the lucky ones who was just in time to do his the armament practice camp on the old Furies, biplane Furies, super aeroplane. There it was.
They looked lovely.
Oh, they were right, absolutely
they?
Gorgeous.
They
thing.
Were right.
Gorgeous thing to fly, absolutely, yeah.
The manoeuvrability, I suppose, of a biplane with that amount of power was fabulous.
Yes, it was very nice on the controls, was it? Very. I mean, incredible to me to think of that. This was what, 1939, and we were at war at the end of the year, and we were still using open cockpit aeroplanes with the old Vickers guns firing through the propellers, and you went off to the ranges with a tools clearing third stoppage stuck in your flying boot.
What was it at that?
Well, because the locks of the Vickers guns were prone to jamming.
Yes.
And of course they were accessible from the cockpit.
Yes.
So if you had a stoppage, you took this absurd tool out of your...
Oh.
If you'd identified it as a third stoppage, you pull this tool out and extracted the lock. Amazing. I remember it clearly, actually, because I did some aerobatics on the way back from the range and lost my tools clearing third stoppage, for which I think I was fined 2 and 6 pence.
Now, that was in an operational squadron, presumably?
No, this was just the practice cup, yes.
Still a Crammel.
Yes, you ended up your training by going for a month or 6 weeks, I can't remember how long, to armament practice camp, to actually fire on the ranges. We went to Sutton Bridge on the Wash.
Ah. And you were what, about 20 then, I suppose, were you?
I would be, yes. Where were we, sir? Yes, I'd be about 20. Mm. Yes. Mm.
Yeah. When did you move to Hurricanes?
Well, let me think. I must have been posted to 73 Squadron at Digby in about July 1939. This, again, an amazing thing to me, looking back on it. And even at that stage, with war looming on the horizon, the serviceability was terribly bad on the aeroplanes. And the junior members in the squad, we got very little flying. I think by the time we went to France, I'd done 6 hours on a Hurricane.
Now, these were Hurricane 1s.
Hurricane 1s, a wooden prop.
Wooden two-bladed props.
Yes.
Fixed pitch.
That's right. For which, that's an interesting one, actually, because I did a week's orderly officer after my first solo on the Hurricane, because I was warned strictly by my flight commander. He said, now, look, when you open this thing up, it's going to swing like mad if you open it up too quickly. And you've got to open it up very, very gently and make sure you keep straight. Because the torque really was terrific. And, of course, the acceleration was very, very poor. So, anyway, to cut a long story short, I lined up on the grass airfield at Digby and started this takeoff. And, of course, compared to the Audax or the Fury, it seemed to be hardly accelerating at all. So by the time I was about halfway across the airfield, I started to poke the power on and lost it. And it swung round and round to the left. And when I finally got airborne, I flew along in front of the hangars at Digby. So I was taking off to the side. And I can remember looking over the side in horror and seeing the squadron adjutant looking out of the his window, absolutely staggered at this Hurricane going past at eye level. I jolly lucky I went between the hangars and out into the Bundo, but people weren't very amused by it.
Had you got your wheels up in time?
No, I wasn't. You weren't allowed to put your wheels up on the first solo in case you forgot to put them down. Oh no, I didn't take the put the wheels up. But it wasn't a very glorious effort.
Well, of course, you couldn't go dual, could you? I mean,
no, you couldn't.
Presumably, your experience on Furies, they reckon, prepared you for the performance of the Hurricane.
Goodness only knows, but of course, it seemed a weird feeling coming out of a biplane onto this thing, because all you had in front of you, see, was this sort of rounded nose. You seem to be sitting on top of it instead of in it, like you were in the Fury. But anyway, it was an exciting conversion.
Presumably also you flew that first solo with the canopy open, did you, or did you shut that down?
No, I think I left it open. I can't remember now.
Anyhow, you eventually extended the performance of the aircraft. And how did you find it then compared, once you were in the air, gears up, canopy closed, comparing it to the Fury? Was it a step forward?
No, I think it took quite a time to get used to it. I mean, even when I was operational in France, I think I'd only done 6.5 hours before I did my first patrol in the Hurricane. I was still very uninclined to take liberties. I mean, I couldn't swing it around like you did the Fury. I was pretty, pretty careful with it.
About things like its rate of roll, did that compare well?
I think they're about the same. It was quite a Hurricane. Was quite a manoeuvrable little aeroplane. Yes, you could outturn the early 109Es pretty well, but of course the performance wasn't. It wasn't quite as fast as the 109, but it was a good aeroplane.
No. So you went to France with about 6 hours on Hurricane.
Yes.
What did you do there?
Well, we went out as part of the, what do they call us then? The Advanced Air Striking Force, which was a pitiful little band of chaps, really, when you come to think of it. But anyway, there were two squadrons, 73 mine and one squadron, and we were up on the border between France and Germany, up along the by Strasbourg and Trier. And of course, in the sort of dead period before war really broke out in May 1940, we used to just patrol up and down the frontier and occasionally chase these reconnaissance aeroplanes. So one of my claims to fame was I was scrambled very early one morning after some, I think it was a Dornier 217, I can't quite remember what it was. Anyway, I was one of the first down on the airfield and leapt into the first Hurricane available, which belonged to a chap called Orton, and got off and started chasing this chap who turned round and was heading back into Germany over the corner by Trier. The only unfortunate thing was that the in all the excitement, that airman hadn't turned the oxygen on the main bottle. So by the time, this thing was, I suppose, about 25,000 feet. And by the time I was up about 18 or 19, I was thoroughly anoxic. I remember getting underneath him. I was thinking, how can I get up? How do I get behind it? I cannot think how I get behind it. And that was really the last I remember, because the next thing I knew, I'd woken up in a screaming dive at about 10,000 feet. And I had obviously lost consciousness. Anyway, I didn't know where I was, so anyway, all I could do was put west on the compass and fly west. And my fuel was pretty low. And I saw, to my great joy, a very small airfield, but SRLZ, written on the top of the hangar. I thought, oh, well, anyway, at least I'm in France. I'll put down before the fuel runs out, which I did. And I was lucky because it was a waterlogged little field, and I realized afterwards, had it not been waterlogged, I'd have gone through the far hedge, it was so small. But unfortunately, it wasn't France, it was in Luxembourg. So I was interned in Luxembourg for about 6 weeks, and I ran away on Christmas Day, managed to get back to the squadron. So that was all right. Well, to keep the thing brief, I got back into the squadron, and nothing much happened until, was it May 1940, when all hell broke loose. And
were you still on the same sector?
Well, we started there, but as soon as the war really broke out, the airfield was immediately bombed. And we started moving westward practically every night. The first move was to Reims, which was a terrible business, really, because we were spent 2 days escorting these unfortunate battles, you know, on the bombing. It was a terrible thing. And I forget the name of the squadron that was with us in Reims. I think 226, I think. Back to the whole lot were wiped out, you know, in 2 days. Absolutely appalling. It really was dreadful. And I think we were about 4 days in Reims, and then we moved further west, Villeneuve, I think, or Gay. And again, I can remember landing in Villeneuve, one of these little grass airfields. And there was a battle on its belly. Absolutely riddled with bullet holes. A dead chap in the back, and a chap sitting on the side of a slit trench with a bottle of booze. And that, he was the chap who'd been flying this battle, and he was again the only member of the squadron that had survived this raid. Frightful. Really dreadful, this battle squadron. So anyway, well, luckily, by just before the very end, reinforcements were flown out, and four of us, were relieved and got sent back to the UK. And the remnants of, or the people on rest from 73, started a Hurricane OTU at Sutton Bridge on the Wash. An operational training unit, and the boys from one squadron ran a operational training unit at Aston Down. Yeah.
During all your time, you were talking about your gradual retreat from France. Mm. You had a lot of enemy contact at that time.
Oh yes, from time to time, yes. Mm. Yes.
Anything interesting?
It's such an amazing period, really. The thing really, it's funny the sort of cameos you get. The thing that stuck in my memory was going off from Reims Airfield. Can't remember to do what. About 11 o'clock in the morning. And getting up to about 10,000 feet. Looking to the east, and the sky was literally full of aeroplanes. I have never seen so many aeroplanes. I mean, just great squadrons of these Heinkels and Dorniers and things. An absolutely amazing sight. I don't know why.
Because the Battle of Britain hadn't started then. It wasn't there off the coast.
No.
And then your evacuation, you literally just flew back across the channel, did you?
No, I didn't actually, no, because a chap called Graham Paul and I and a couple of sergeant pilots, no. We were posted, you see, back to England for a rest. So, typical Air Force, that's it. we tried to take a train back, can you believe? So we took a train to Paris, I remember. We got thoroughly drunk in Paris for a few hours. And then I think somebody must have told us the only possible way we liked to get out was out of Cherbourg. And I don't know how we did this. We somehow managed to get on a on a train, and lock ourselves in the compartments, because the thing was absolutely covered with refugees. And eventually we did. We got to Sherbury. And
caught a boat.
And we caught a boat. Amazing, really, when you
what
think
kind
of
it. Boat was it?
I can't even remember that, you know.
I mean, is this the sort of alcoholic haze you were still in, or...?
We were pretty alcoholic, I must say. No, it was quite. It was. It wasn't a military boat. It was just a small, small boat, as far as I remember. Yeah, I mean, it was a steamer. It was a...
What happened to your planes? Who took those then?
Ah, but don't forget, we'd been replaced. You see, they'd flown out.
Oh, I see.
Replacement pilots, who didn't last long, actually, because they, I think, within a week, the squadron were at Le Mans, which was our final. Airfield, and then they were the Hurricanes that remained, because there were a lot of Hurricanes were being shot down. They flew back, and the Richard ground crew contingent got to Nantes, Saint-Nazaire, and most of them, well, a lot of them, were on the Lancastrian, unfortunately. So. The bomb, so we lost a lot of our original faithful ground crew. Yeah.
Anyhow, you got back to the UK and reformed.
Well, no, we well.
You were mentioning just now.
Well, we didn't. At least I didn't reform the squadron. Well, the squadron, yes, I went up to I think Church Fenton. Remained in being. But I was saying, those of us who'd been in the early bit of the war were sent to this OTU at Sutton Bridge to instruct the poor chaps who were going to fly in the Battle of Britain. So, from where was it, about May until December. I was at Sutton Bridge, where we took people out of training, gave them a quick bang round in a Harvard or a Master, and then stuck them in Hurricanes, gave them 15 hours formation flying, dogfighting, whatever we could fit in the 15 or 16 hours, and sent them off to the squadron. A bit of a small training there.
And you spent the whole of the Battle of Britain period at this OTU.
That's right. Yeah. And then at the end of the year, I was posted to 56 Squadron at North Weald, but was only there, I never flew with them, was only there about 3 weeks, and then for some reason was picked to go to the Middle East with a miscellaneous bunch of chaps from Fighter Command. It was quite hilarious, and about 30 of us, that's not as many as that, it's about 20, 25 of us, found ourselves dispatched to Greenock in Scotland on this mysterious expedition. Found ourselves on the Furious aircraft carrier. That was an education, so we eventually... Oh, that's right, nobody would say what we were going to do. But until we got to sea. But the hangars underneath were full of Hurricanes. And on board there was the Swordfish Squadron, Esmond's Swordfish Squadron, which were wiped out in that other thing, and a Fulmer Squadron. Yeah, that's just the two. That's the Swordfish and Fulmer Squadron. Anyway, this again was extraordinary because, obviously for operational reasons, the thing teetered out into the North Atlantic and messed about before it finally... We went into Jib. Whether to refuel, I can't remember. Anyway, then we went out again, out into the Oggin. And round the west coast of Africa, when the Navy did then tell us what we were supposed to be doing, which was to fly these hurricanes off to Takoradi and then take them up across Nigeria and the Sudan to the Western Desert.
Long way around.
Long way around. But the degree of organization was unbelievable because about 3 days before we got to off Takoradi, the sergeant pilots, of course, were up, up in the one end of the ship. The officers were in the midshipman's berth in the other end. The senior flight sergeant came along to our senior chap, who was on flight lieutenant chap, and said, "Look, I hear a rumour, sir, that we're going to fly these hurricanes off this carrier." You see? And he said, "Yeah, that is apparently true." Well, I said, "Do you think some fairly experienced hurricane chap could come and brief a couple of our lads? Because we've never actually flown hurricanes before. We're a Spitfire." Can you imagine? Anyway, the other bit of nonsense was that we did the sums ourselves, because when the weather was bad, we had to go down in the hangar to watch these aeroplanes to see if they didn't run about and get damaged. We thought, well, we counted them. I can't remember how many there were. 35, 40. We thought, well, there's only 25 of us. What are they going to do with the rest? So very daringly, in the wardroom, we bearded the commander out and said, "You know, what are you going to do with the other aeroplanes when we've flown off these?" He said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, there are only 25 of us, and there are, what, 35 aeroplanes." He said, "What? What? Can't be." Anyway, this is it. And do you know, the captain was absolutely livid, because the submarine scare was quite considerable. You know, he didn't really like to be off the west coast of Africa anyway. Yeah. What it meant was the wretched chap had got to spend a day steaming up and down the coast in front of Takoradi while we flew off the first lot of hurricanes, and then he hoisted his swordfish chaps aboard, flew them off to Takoradi, picked up 10 of us, brought us back to fly a second lot off. You know, you can imagine, this really went down like a like a death charge. Anyway, it was pretty good stuff, because they all had these, Navy had fitted these long-range tanks for us. They all were, out of all the aeroplanes, one was damaged taking off, because the Furious was a very old aircraft carrier, and had a ridiculous sort of bumps in the end of the flight deck that chucked the old aeroplanes into the air. Well,
it used to be a battle cruiser, didn't it?
That's right,
yeah.
Battle cruiser. Anyway, some chap knocked a wheel off, hurling it down too much, and somebody crashed on landing at Takoradi, but otherwise we got the whole lot off all right.
But you didn't take off with total fuel load, did you, in the long-range tank?
I think we did, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, because we're quite some way offshore.
Must have had a damn good headwind to get off, surely. There's no catapults, were there?
No, I mean, but you could steam the thing up by, I don't know, about 30 knots or so. The hurricane was a bit of a butterfly, really, you know.
When you say they knocked up these long-range tanks for you, they weren't standard manufacturers, then?
No, I mean, they fitted them. The Navy, we took the tanks with us, and the Navy fitted them. But what was good, really, was that there was no, nobody came down because they had feed troubles from them, which is quite easy to get, you know, in these long-range tanks.
So they enabled you to fly from Takoradi all the way across northern Africa to the Western Desert in one period,
right.
Of the
Yeah.
Incredible. That was quite a feat.
Yeah, we had they put Blenheims, they put a Blenheim crew down We went off in batches of six. And the Blenheim to do the navigation between, because some of the legs are pretty obscure, like, I can't remember now, Kano to Maiduguri, you know, it's just Bundu, really.
I know the area.
You know the area, do you? Do you?
Not from the air, though.
We've been on the moon.
There's a film years back.
Really?
It's interesting because going back, you'll see on the list I've interviewed Bill Bedford sometime.
Yes, yes.
Now, he did a similar lift of hurricanes out to Burma, and they were accompanied by Blenheims.
Were they?
So, obviously, it was a good guide dog, if you like.
In those
days, wasn't it? And you had no nav problems at all? I mean,
no. They took us as far as. Khartoum, and then of course we navigated ourselves up the Nile. Can't remember, we stopped at Wadi Halfa, I think, and then up to the canal.
But you didn't need to top up with fuel on the way.
Oh yeah, I forget the legs. We could do, I think, about 450 miles, something like that. Oh no,
and obviously all the they put down dumps of fuel ahead of you.
Well, I mean, there were fuel at, I can't remember the stops now. Well, if you turn that off for a sec, I'll show you.